relationships are worth much more than the money you make between your 20s and 30s. My self-confidence is very much driven by money. Because if I can make... You see, there's nothing worse than the burden of wealth without perspective.
Right.
The amount of money that can flow into your account is a subject of your abundance and your mentality around the use and deployment of capital.
Hey guys, welcome to yet another episode of Financially Incorrect. I am your host, Barack. And remember, this episode is proudly sponsored by fxpesa.com, an online trading platform. They have 6 locations in Kenya. They're also in Uganda. And we are always looking to grow more and more. We educated 1 million people got to a target of educating 1 million people in financial literacy last year. This is one of their key ventures for that. So please check them out. Their links are always in the description box. Today, I have a really exciting guest. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I will introduce him as soon to be birthday boy. The day after this podcast goes up is his big 30th birthday.
Hey, come on.
His big 30th birthday. He's a lawyer. He's just finished his master's in finance and law in London. And he is the co-host, one of the key founders for the Man Talk podcast. Mm. Oscar Corman, welcome.
First of all, I have to clap you in. That's a hell of an introduction. Fantastic. Thank you for the birthday wishes. I'm a huge fan of Financially Incorrect. First of all, your logo is banging.
Yeah.
Whoever's responsible for that.
That's out. Collins and the team.
It's banging. It's wild. And I'm a huge fan, man.
Thank you. What are you looking forward to get done on this podcast? Are you nervous?
First of all,
speaking about money.
I think I'm about to talk about something that I really struggle talking about. I think everybody has this little insecurity when they're talking about like their finances, when they're talking about like their financial journey.
Yeah.
And I think that you guys are really doing a positive and powerful thing, especially with FXPESA.
Yeah.
I can give you some stats on how, like, for example, FXPESA as a forex business, 36% return on hard currency reserves.
Yeah.
Is the highest rate of return we are seeing right now here in Kenya.
Yeah.
It's even bigger than the bond market, which did 15-18% last year. So like, this is the right rule.
To be in. Do you think that money conversation changes? Do you think it comes from a place of scarcity?
Well, I don't know if you'll allow me to enter into my background before I start to be having conversations around scarcity.
Please do.
My first... Like, I think scarcity has been a huge part of the Kenyan experience with money. Like, I remember like the first time I ever like had cash in my pocket, I was 7 years old, and I was telling my aunt goodbye at JKIA. Then, when you know there were portals in like the 90s, imagine now you know our age. And an air hostess for Emirates, and I still remember her face, handed me 100 shillings. But you know, she's just trying to get rid of the loco, which is just flying out.
Right.
And she gave me that 100 shillings, and I've never forgotten it till today. The first thing I did was flex. And that just tells you like the mentality that we tend to have when we make a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. First thing you do when you make some cash is like you suddenly want, the whole world is open to you. You're going to buy Mabano, you're going to buy Mabuyus, you're going to buy crisps. It's the same kind of mentality that we have around money as Africans, where it's like you make a little bit and suddenly you wanna show it off. In Swahili we say, maskini akipata matako liambwata. You know, like that scarcity mentality and that ability to create and recreate wealth is not something that we see a lot here in Africa. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a mentality that we really need to shed and move forward from.
So if I was to ask you, I mean, based off of, I guess, that background and the scarcity element, why do you think you find it difficult to talk about money? Do you talk about money openly to your friends, your circle? Do they know how much you earn? Do you know how much they earn?
No way. All of those things. Like, I think even professionally, there's so many facets where the conversation around money is kind of blocked and mooted. And no one likes talking about how much they make, because you might come out of that situation feeling less confident, feeling more confident. You might undervalue yourself. You might overvalue yourself. There are so many complexities around making money and how you communicate that wealth. And I don't think, as friends, we've removed the stigma around that conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, for example... I have the benefit of seeing both the legal and financial industry pay, and I can tell you from entry level, like I remember just balking at the numbers for financial guys who are working in private equity, guys who are working in investment banking, versus local Kenyans who are like working as lawyers and starting out. Like the difference in pay is insane, but the difference in lifestyle is not. You know, mm-hmm. or you find lawyers are making significantly less, but they're living significantly larger lives mm-hmm. and lifestyles because they have to keep up a certain appearance in order mm-hmm. to attract high quality work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these lifestyle concerns and lifestyle considerations are harming us, although we don't really talk about money. Plus, nobody wants to be perceived by his boy or his chick as broke. Mm-hmm. But in relationships, I think it's a necessary conversation. Before yeah. me, I don't think I can run a relationship without telling Shori, by the way, don't start ordering Bacardi.
Right.
Drink water. Right. Drink tea. Yeah,
right.
That's how I see it.
Okay, interesting. For you, how much do you think the role, or what does the role money play in your self-confidence? I mean, if you were to name the things if you were to name the things that make you who you are.
Jesus.
What do you think that list would comprise of?
That list would comprise of many things. I think a strong sense of identity is top of that list. I think I've also kind of learned to value relationships. The big lesson in now that it's a birthday mm-hmm. podcast.
The big lesson
of my 30s is that relationships are worth much more than the money you make between your 20s and 30s. That's been the lesson of my 30s, where I once, you know, when I went to first class of law school in Strath, mm-hmm. everybody's asked, what do you want to be? And that time was when Iron Man came out. Mm-hmm. So I was like, playboy, billionaire. Yeah, well, that thing he says, playboy, yeah. Playboy, billionaire, philanthropist. Right. That's what I was known. Like in class, guys just started calling me Oscar, playboy, billionaire, philanthropist. Right, right. So like I always wanted to make a ton in the beginning of my 20s. But now at the end, I'm finding that the real value is the relationships that I built.
Okay.
Right. You know, the relationship, let's say, with you now that you're going to have about this podcasting game and like the ideas we'll exchange about it, or Collins's experience here at FX Pesa and the conversation about that. So that's the real value that we walk away from our, you know, 20s from. That's notwithstanding, my self-confidence is very much driven by money. Because if I can make... That's notwithstanding.
Right.
Yeah, man. Like, hey, your boy, like, you know, look at how clean you look. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Right. That comes from cash.
Right.
So, yeah. So.
Question around the lessons you've taken from 2030s. And you said when you watch Strathmore, first year, first class, you want to be like Iron Man, right? And make money.
Yeah, first class ever. Like, I entered the class. Right? Yeah.
Do you think if you had made a shitload of money between your 30s, your philosophy would be different?
Barak, you're very good at interviews.
Do you think you'd have to tell you that?
Let me interrupt you to tell you. It's a very good question. Would my idea of life, I 100% think so. I think the most unhappy period of my life, this might surprise a lot of people, but when I was younger, you see, there's nothing worse than the burden of wealth without perspective.
Right.
You see, when you make money, but you don't have the perspective that comes with creating the wealth, like a lot of people often find, you know, you've made a ton of cash, but you're not so wise about it.
Right.
A lot of pain comes into your life because everybody wants to take something from you.
Right.
Whereas now, I think if the money came today, you know, if we finish this podcast and I walk out and I'm baked, I think I'd be a lot more reserved, and I think I'd be a lot more wise. I think you've had some really good guests here who've shared a lot of perspectives on money and how they handle it. And a lot of that comes from the lessons of losing and making that money. Mm-hmm. But if you have a ton of it and you don't have the wisdom that comes with making and creating wealth, I think that's where the problems begin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. We will have an interesting discussion today. I'm seeing already like 15 minutes in.
Yeah.
But let's get to it. Did you pursue law, or what was the reason for pursuing law? Was there an element of, you know, this money that's going to be made here?
I'll tell you the real story around me pursuing law was I always had a passion for business. And that came from my first ever job came from. So I did two roles before I was even 16. Mm-hmm. The first one was, my granddad used to give you 10 shillings or 20 shillings from, I think it was 20 bob, for a kilogram of macadamia nuts.
Okay.
So like when I was growing up in Meru, at the time when I used to visit him, I used to like pick up a lot of macadamia nuts with the villagers, and then we go and then we make some money. Mm. And then that money buys the sweets. Then so like my relationship with cash came from that. Mm-hmm. And then it also came from, I worked at a publishing house where I used to read books. Mm-hmm. And then I'd write my notes as a, you know, those children's books where you say, I don't like this, this book is boring. And then they take that feedback and say, oh, this focus group with that kid, we've given him 50 shillings. He doesn't like this book or that book. And I used to work for, it was called Sasasema Product.
How did you get, did you get into that
I was space? Born, I was actually born in, I was born in South B. Uh-huh. And the owner of the house was the head of publishing for Sasasema Publications. Mm. So I grew up around a lot of comics, a lot of books. Right. And she knew that I had been reading for a long time, even when I was like 10, 12. And so she gave me the job. I said, come here, read this book and tell me what you think. Read this manuscript, tell me what you think. So that was my first ever like being paid for.
Okay.
That was my first transactional relationship.
Right.
And the way I used to, that money, I used to take it. And instead of saving or doing, I'm not going to lie here and say, I used to, you know what, I was Warren Buffetting it. And then I turned it into a business. No way. Thing I did was I used to take that money and eat chips.
Right.
downstairs in South Bay. So like I had created this relationship with money. And then now when I finished high school, went to study business studies, my friend, his name is Adrian, shout out to him.
What high school did you go to?
Oh, do you want to know? First of all, never ask a man like me.
I have a feeling.
Say it.
It's going to be Alliance.
It is. Amen. Hallelujah. Praise God on
that. Alliance, guys.
I didn't bring it up.
Alliance.
I didn't bring it up.
This guy was also in Alliance.
Yeah.
Call him.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Bush guys. Shout out. You see, that's why the set is green.
Alliance, guys.
Green like
I'm telling
money.
You, second to only St. Mary's, guys. But anyway.
No. Unfortunately, we haven't come second, yes. But anyway. But yeah, so then my first visit ever to the NSC happened. And I was like, I think I was like 15. Mm-hmm. So my boy was like, oh, do you know about stocks? Do you know about... And like, we went to town and like, we lipad, like Panda the Matatu got off and got into the stock exchange. And then I remember sitting on that bench and then just seeing the numbers. And he was like, yeah, this is where... Do you know, have you heard of Merali and the tire and the Yana Tires business? Mm-hmm. This is where it goes. Have you heard of EABL? Have you heard of Safaricom? This is how Safaricom makes money. Mm-hmm. Leave alone what you pay. So like that... So like the idea of corporate finance was kind of put in me at that age. Mm-hmm. And now in... that I'm 30, my master's is in corporate finance. Mm-hmm. And so when I joined law school, just to tie it all back, I joined law school to kind of have a, because I told myself.
But what were your options? Did you have any other options or was it law?
No, it was law because I was raised by lawyers, yes. But and that's the only perspective I had. But I was doing it because I was told growing up, you're not good at math. So I thought, let me get close to the capital by doing law. Let me learn about business by doing law and then I'll study corporate law and I'll try and be good at it.
Right.
And so my pursuit started then. Okay.
Okay. So it was both from, sounds like it was both from, wanting to make money.
Yes.
Because I mean, if you're saying that you want to be Iron Man in your first class, it means you had an ambition to make a lot of money.
I could tell you business after business. Like, because I was in South Sea. I was raised in South Sea. So, I could tell you stories, but let's just keep going.
And what do you think? So, as you're in your pursuit through law school, your 4 years, what's your perception of money becoming then? How I guess I'm also trying to find out how you end up at this point where you are at now, where you're saying, actually, the last 10 years, the decade, the most important thing has been the relationships and not so much about the money. So I'm trying to figure out within those 4 years, what happens for your money?
Let me tell you. Let's go. So I don't know if you grew up in that part of Nairobi, but every morning you'll see a long queue of guys coming from Kibera, going into town, going into South B, into industrial area, and coming out with pay.
Right.
And like I used to wake up in the morning and go to class every day. So like
and they would walk on that madaraka.
Yeah, you see, now you're walking with them.
Yeah.
But you see, the thing that's humming in your head is that we're all doing this because at the end of the day, we're all trying to get paid. Mm-hmm. We're all trying to make money. I'm being given this 200 in allowance because everyone's trying to get paid. And one of the first business things that I learned about money at that time was, like, money is, I used to say when I was young, crazy now that I think about it, it's a regional product. I think I'll translate it. It's regional. Because one of the first businesses I ever worked in or first hustle I ever did was, there used to be this, do you remember these guys? How can I forget their name? These guys used to do EDM events.
I visualize the guys. Are they the ones who did Earth Dance?
Earth Dance, those Earth Dance guys, yeah.
I know,
yeah,
those Collins, what are they called?
Kenyan Knights, but before Kenyan Knights,
there was something,
there was a name, but they used to sell Earth Dance tickets,
I know who you're talking about,
yeah. Those guys,
if you know who they are, tell us in the comments. I know who you're talking about.
How can I forget on this interview, God? And this is about money,
yeah.
So, one of the hustles we came up with as kids, guys in South Sea, is Earth Dance tickets used to be sold at Capitol Center at a specific toy store. Mm-hmm. So we used to go there and then buy the After Dance tickets, all of them. Mm-hmm. Because there used to be, I think there used to be 3K or something. Yeah. So we used to changa, we find a way to make like,
yeah
we do, whether we'll figure out how to find the money.
Right.
So we buy all of the tickets in bulk. Mm-hmm. And then when there's a shortage, we show up at the gate and sell them at the door.
And so you guys were like piracy.
My guy, me, I'm telling you, this whole money thing, because like we've grown up in South Sea, we're seeing, I remember, oh my, I can tell you stories if you know that. So like because we used to see like the Kile kids come and buy the tickets. And we used to see the Karen kids come and buy the tickets. They're coming out of BMWs. As we've crossed the road from, you know, the Mombasa road, and there's no flyover, so we've crossed the road so we can buy these tickets. I mean, we're like, man, say the money isn't with us.
Yeah.
The money seems to be in
elsewhere.
Yeah, it's in Hillcrest. These kids for Hillcrest are coming to buy. And us guys from Alliance G, we've come from, we're getting 1,000 shillings for a whole term. In fact, that's actually what I used to save.
Yeah.
I used to make sure, like, I don't eat too much at the canteen.
Yeah.
Because so that I can have that 1,000 shillings to buy those tickets. I come with my 1,000, it comes with 1,000. Then we go, we say it's 6K. So both of all of us come out of there with 2K each.
Yeah.
So, like, these little hustles, we kind of understood that money comes from people.
Yeah.
And if money comes from people, then you have to understand how people think.
Yeah.
And it was at that young age in South Sea that money comes from people. So already in my mind, I'm thinking, if money comes from people, then it also means that even these guys from Kibera, even them, they have money that they use, that they spend, that they use to live their daily lives. So my passion, the reason why I said I wanted to be a Playboy billionaire philanthropist, wasn't for my own gain. It's because I had seen like money needs to be equitably distributed. It can't be that some people are driving in Benzes and some people are walking to work. And kind of that psychology has influenced a lot of the decision making in my life, that you have to make wealth accessible. And that's why this financial literacy product that you've made is so powerful to me, because it allows anyone and everyone to be able to access that information.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're getting through your Strathmore law school.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're getting pocket money at that point.
Yeah.
Are you, I know you've talked about saving your Alliance pocket money.
Yeah.
For Strathmore, are you putting any away? Are you spending all of it? What's happening with your money during those 4 years?
Strath, because I wasn't making, I used to save money by working.
Oh, actually, let me ask you. You know, how enjoyable is it to be a student at Strathmore University?
Why?
With a stringent rules.
Dude, like, let me tell you something. You people focus too much on what's happening inside Strathmore. You should start focusing on what happens around Strathmore. Ask yourself about Siwaka, Madaraka, Langata. No, that the vibe and the energy there is very different. You know, we go to class to read, but what happens when we leave the environments of class? Like, I think the reason why I really, really liked Strathmore, for me, it was a moment of huge development. Like, I really grew in Strath, and it changed my mindset from being local to being international. I made the most money I've ever made in my life in Strath, and I made it as a student, and I made it on exchange.
Right.
I worked for Cisco in 2015 in my third year. The dean, shout out to Dr. Franceschi, allowed me to go for this internship that I had gotten through a relationship. Again, there was a kid who came to exchange. I think Collins will even remember him. There were kids who used to come from exchange from Governor's School, which is in the U.S. And one of those kids, their dad was the head of legal for Cisco in the U.S. And so he hooked me. When that son came back years later, he said he wants to see Oscar. So we had a relationship in terms of speaking and showing him around, him and his family. And then suddenly the dad was like, dude, you're a really smart kid. I think you need to see the world more. I'm offering you an internship in London if you'll take it. And so I took the internship and I went to London off of my high school homie. High school relationship. And then
how much did they pay you for that?
£3,000.
How long were you there for?
£3,000. I came back in Kenya. I had £3,000 and I was 21. 20. I was actually, no, 20, 21. Yeah.
21, yeah.
21.
Yeah.
£3,000.
You remember what you did with that money?
I did. I bought Centum stock.
For £3,000?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a wise decision.
And ask yourself what that did in like 3 years.
Yeah.
Ask yourself the question. Ask yourself the question.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And like, and remember that this comes from me being taken to the stock exchange when I was 15, 16.
Right.
Like, so I knew there's money in the stock exchange. So like,
why is stock exchange and not anything else? Is it because
I didn't do bonds? I didn't do bonds. And I did Centum because I had a huge belief in, at that time, Centum was like, I knew it was investment banking. And I knew that, I kind of had an understanding that, you know, in finance, investment bankers tend to scale and grow businesses. It's a private equity play. And I knew what private equity was at a time when not many people did. So yeah, I invested a significant percentage of that money in Santam, yeah. And it grew over 2-3 years.
Okay.
And then I withdrew it for vibes. So
at the end of the day, vibes still wins.
Yeah.
Okay. So you finish your degree, right?
Yes.
At Strathmore.
Yeah.
Get into KSL.
No, right? Actually, I took a gap year. Okay. So I wrote my dissertation on data protection. So before that, I had written a book on land corruption. University of Humboldt. So I used to be into oil and gas at the time I was finishing school. We'd set up an oil and gas, I think it's called Extractives Baraza in Strath, but that time it was called the Oil and Gas Center.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was tasked with assisting entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm trying to make wealth more accessible by kind of sharing my information and kind of how to draw contracts and how small businesses, artisanal mining businesses can become like large tech businesses that can be able to grow revenue in the mining industry. So I'd seen kind of an opportunity there. So it got me an internship with Transparency International. Mm-hmm. It was an internship, it's a consultancy.
Mm-hmm.
And we were writing a book on land corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that book, when we were writing it, so we had to do a case study in St. Catharines in South B, and we had to go to Kwale Titanium over there, based Titanium, to kind of see how land rights were being handled over in, it's a place called Msambweni.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I learned again a ton about how society functions, especially around like mineral assets. So it was an amazing experience. Then after that, my dissertation got published. And then, no, not published. Somebody downloaded it in South Africa, CEO of...
And the data protection one.
Yeah, the data protection one. So I got a call.
Mm-hmm.
And said, "Hey, are you Oscar? Yeah, we've been trying to reach you. The school told us that you worked for Cisco before. There's a role here at a firm called ESET.
Mm-hmm.
Would you come in and want to work as a sales manager?" That time I was doing sales and research.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, now this is where the story gets sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went to work at ESET,
mm-hmm.
so I got paid the most money I've ever
been
paid.
So you go down to South Africa?
I don't go down to South Africa. Oh. I don't go down to South Africa. They had an office here in this very building.
Right.
Now in this very building. Mm-hmm. One of my guys,
mm-hmm.
who was my cybersecurity distributor, was a guy called Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick went on to open a barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
And that barbershop's name is Castro's Man Cave.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
So now Castro's Man Cave, he wants to... So because me and him are homies,
mm-hmm.
he tells me, I need a marketing idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell him, man, men's podcasts are banging.
Mm-hmm.
You need to start a men's podcast if you have this beautiful space. Mm-hmm. He's like, bro, I'm way on top of that. I have a guy called Eli and a guy called Martin Kimathi. Let's do a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, that's really cool. So I end up bumping into them at, it was Baubox.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I bump into them. They're setting up the podcast. And I tell them, if you need a guest, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
So again, now you're seeing from my relationships, really driving me towards kind of my purpose.
How much were the... Guys, is that paying you? How much did it? What is that offering you?
Oh God, I can't say that really. I signed an NDA. But right. I'll tell you.
You were there as a consultant.
No. I was staff, sales and research. Right. Yeah, I was sales and research lead. Right. That was my role. So I was the youngest on the team, but yeah, the bag was.
It was good money. What did you do with the money?
Nothing. In fact, that's the money I wasted the most.
Oh really?
Yeah, because at that time, like I said, money found me when I wasn't wise.
Mm-hmm. Because I have a question. It seems like when you go for this internship, right, on your third year, you come back with £3,000, you invest it.
Yeah.
So what happens between that kind of thinking and that person
to
this person who you're seeing now was wasting?
It was wasteful.
I was wasteful about the money that
because
you got.
Now what ended up happening was that, yes, I've made the Santam play was beautiful and like I was young enough to kind of realize that this is good ROI, but when I looked at my ESET, the time when I started working at ESET, it was the time when I'd say I was emotionally involved somewhere else. I can't really.
I see.
You see what I mean?
I see.
Where like, and then something happened.
Mm-hmm.
So now I couldn't, like I didn't have the emotional bandwidth to handle like a breakup the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So now I just started splurging. Like I just started bleeding resources.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think it was a learning experience and it also allowed me to develop a personality. I feel like I was very, as you can hear, I was very robotic. You can imagine job after job after job after job. I'm not telling you about vibes in Strathmore. I'm telling you, I was in the library. I don't know much.
Yeah.
But like, with this specific experience at ESET, it made me a little bit more human. Right. I started finding out a little bit more about nightlife. Kengeles, I started blacking out at night. You know, I was a bit careless.
Right.
And that carelessness, right now I might say it was sad and disheartening, but when I think back about it, I'm like, it's what made Man Talk. Because now I can relate with all of the stories that everyone is trying to tell me.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So how long do you work at ESET?
I worked for...
And when do you go to KSL? Because you said you took a gap year.
Yeah. So that gap year was that ESET year. Okay. So I worked for ESET for that year. Then Raila started the demonstrations.
Right.
Hey, and my business was the retail business. So I used to go down in areas like Jamia Mosque, mm-hmm. And then like push cybersecurity. You know the way you sell laptops, cybersecurity?
Right. Yeah. Right.
I used to be like, yeah, that's what you do so that you can push sales. So we used to push sales that way. Then I used to have corporate clients as well. So I was pushing sales. I was trying to get guys to push my products. Mm-hmm. Then the demonstrations happened. So the business really took a hit.
Mm-hmm. Demonstrations of which year?
2017.
Right, yeah. Okay.
So the business really took a hit.
Yeah.
And then I think towards the end, I just started seeing things in the company where guys are being told, yeah, I think I started feeling that instability.
Yeah.
So what I decided is I was going to resign because there was a clause in my contract that allowed me to. Mm-hmm. And then I was going to go back to law school, which mm-hmm. was hectic. Mm-hmm. So my head wasn't right. But yeah, so I resigned, took that cash, furnished an apartment, went to live in Ngong and lived in Ngong and started law school. Mm-hmm. And that was the brokest day of my life outside of this one. But yeah, that was the brokest day of my life. Yeah.
Okay. So, but at this point, you have no support from your folks. You're figuring it out.
No, a ton of support from my folks, A ton of support from my folks. Because like when I was like, yeah, I may need to move. I'm going back to being a student. I need some financial support. They were like, okay, how much do you need? And then I'm like, I need to pay rent worth 6K, 7K. Then I need to pay this. And it was in Ngong.
Right.
I need to. Then I had a car, so I need to feel, hey. Right. Sold, cut your expectations.
You had the car, so or you sold the car?
No, because it was a family car.
Oh,
I couldn't do such things. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so you get into KSL. I want to talk a bit about the bar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you do the bar when it was 9 exams in 11 days?
Yeah,
or when
9
it was
exams.
Now, because nowadays it's 9 exams, but 3 days, I think it's spaced out. I think they space out the exams now. I think they do now Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
So you do three.
They do over 3 weeks.
It was 11 days.
What was that process like for you, preparing for the bar?
For me, I think I had an amazing experience at KSL, and the people who I met there, I'm going to their weddings now. So it was very powerful. And the thing, again, like I told you, I'm not going to come here and start telling you like, yo, I built this monumental business when I was young that was generating return for me. Sorry to underwhelm you, viewers.
Yeah.
But the thing that for me was really, really important is, again, I'm connecting with classmates. Mm-hmm. These classmates are currently running their own farms. Some are even working in the military. Some really, really brilliant-minded people. And if I didn't take that gap year, then I wouldn't have met them. Mm-hmm. So in a way, I think they nursed me back to health without me knowing.
Mm-hmm.
They nursed my confidence back. They were really just a bright light. So yeah, so I finished law school. Then one of my clients from the ESET days, a beautiful law firm called Triple OK Law, I got recruited to come and do pupillage thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's when. So I joined Triple OK immediately after KSL.
Did you pass the bar at one go?
No.
How many did you pass?
Okay, let me tell you. I passed six.
Six out of nine.
Yeah. And then the worst thing is I divided the exams. I decided I'll do them later.
Also, you did.
No. Yeah, so I did when I passed.
December, then you did.
When I had three. Yeah, so then in the middle of that, there was COVID. So they didn't administer exams for a while.
So I had to wait.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That KSL is.
It was hell.
It's something special. Did you feel any less like.
I was lucky I was working
as a lawyer because you didn't pass all nine.
I'll tell you this, right? I wasn't limited by that because I was working in a team where like we were reporting to the partner and I was in the corporate law department. And I had already a ton of experience, like I've explained, even before I came into the firm. Ton of experience. Mm. And so when I walked in, I was really assisted by like the partnership to actually like work and grow and keep like pushing it. And that's exactly what I did. Did some incredible deals in my time there. And then when I passed the bar, because then I passed the bar before. Then I had to wait for to be sworn in. Because now the swearing in is what took time.
Yeah.
So when I joined the bar, now by the time I'm joining the bar, I've done PPPs, I've done M&A, I've done a ton of useful work.
Right.
And then I was like, And I had a conversation with someone who works in finance, mm-hmm. and it was transformative for me, mm-hmm. even if he didn't know, because he said, look, the problem with being a Kenyan legal practitioner, especially in the field you want to work in corporate finance, is that you're territorially limited. Mm-hmm. If you want to do M&A at that level, then you have to start thinking about getting international exposure. And so, like, that's when I decided to make the investment and go to Queen Mary.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of investment did that take from?
Oh my God.
From I guess it was from you. Did you get support from your family?
It was it was a kind of a blend of both, mm-hmm. Because it was a significant amount of money. Mm-hmm. It was a thing, and my family, thank God that they're there, because like, my family is really big on. So a lot of stakeholders kind of poured into me so that I could manage to do this master's.
Right.
My family, some family friends, a little bit of it came from me as mm-hmm. well. But like they took the bulk of the cost.
Right.
Yeah. And like, I don't even know how they did it. And you can imagine that this is happening during when the pound is.
The Kenya shilling is dropping.
Exactly.
Like a stone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when I left last year, so the pound was 140.
Yeah.
Now it's 205.
Yeah.
While we're speaking.
Yeah, but I wanted to ask you, so what was it like living there? I did my master's there, and when I got there, I mean, there's the preparations that I had,
mm-hmm.
but you know, when you get there and you realize, oh, it's still a little bit more expensive.
Do you mind which one?
I was in Scotland.
Nice.
But you it's still a little bit more expensive than you had budgeted for. And so now I'm trying to figure out for you what that's like now against the pound, which is
I was in London going up. Central. I was in London Central.
Yeah.
So the cost, I think, if I can quantify it, it was thousands of pounds, like per month. I'd even have to start thinking about there was a time when I did like side gigs, so
yeah.
I could just to have some extra money to hedge against kind of, so I don't be a burden on anyone.
Right.
So just kind of doing side gigs, doing a file here, a file there, then you just, you know, you get a few £100 mm-hmm. to kind of keep you pushing. But the biggest problem for me was the consistent depreciation of the shilling.
Yeah.
So this month, you're
getting less and less money.
And
every
month. Have to realize that the first payment method was you pay 70% upfront, mm-hmm. and you pay another 30% after 3 months.
Mm.
The difference between that 70% and that 30% pay in those 3 months, right? It shrunk so significantly because, like, the cost of paying, like, for example, that payment was about. It was about the second payment was about. It was meant to be about like five mic.
Mm-hmm.
But that second payment, by the time we were finishing, it's actually less. So like, it was like 2 mic.
Yeah.
By the time we were finishing, it was at 3.5.
It had gone up by a clean 1.5.
Yeah, a clean mic.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Yeah.
Like a stone. I'm telling you. And when you're now living like in London and trying to like even have a life, because you have to network. You know, you have to meet guys. You have to get coffees. I'm telling you how. The stakeholders involved, how we managed to push this through.
Yeah.
Like I graduated fairly recently, and I remember when I was just shaking that man's hand, I was like, you bastards. Like, I've given you so much money and so much time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of the experience.
Was it tough? I mean, mentally, was it tough? Did you ever feel like there's a month where the money wouldn't come through or it wouldn't be enough?
Yeah, there was a time when banking, like getting a bank account became a problem. So I had like 2 months of not having a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'd get money Western Union.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Western Union cost also is increasing. So I had to like really downsize on my lifestyle
mm-hmm.
and like focus on. Now that's why you eat the oats.
Right.
You eat the oats thrice a day. You don't say a word when you've come from ugali and managu. And that was kind of how I managed to push through. But one of the most powerful things I'd say again about relationships is I'm meeting Kenyans who are working in companies, big banks like Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm meeting guys who are working in Bank of America, guys who are working in hedge funds.
Mm-hmm.
Guys who like their salary, who are private equity fund guys. Mm. So like my vision of I want to kind of get to become an investment professional, mm. I got to see it, live it, breathe it. And I think that just kept me going.
Mm-hmm.
And now in hindsight, when I look back, the reason why I even carry myself a certain way now, I insist on wearing, looking, talking a certain way is because of that experience. Because I didn't just pay for the education.
Yeah.
I paid for the relationships and the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. A question, because initially when you started talking, you talked about the difference between lawyer salaries, especially at the very beginning, against people in private equity.
Yeah.
What was your experience here as a lawyer?
Yeah,
lawyer salary.
No, it's not the best, guys.
Yeah.
It's not the best. Like, I think.
What's the highest lawyer entrance salary you've heard of?
100K.
100K,
yeah,
what is that?
100K. I think all the
one of the big
120
fours.
Yeah, 120, 130. Yeah, I think it's usually 120, 130, yeah. 100 net.
I also about 130. The Coulsons. The...
Yeah. I don't want to name names. You're trying to get me to start saying names. Yeah, I'm not gonna name names. The NKs, the Boomers. Yeah, I know. But like they pay around 130. And by the way, at that time, when I was working, we were paid a pretty competitive salary. So that was how much we were paid.
Yeah.
But where the goose is fat is the bonuses, right?
Yeah.
That's where you wanna kind of. And now that's where debates start to happen.
Right.
People get bonuses depending on their performance. But for me, what really attracted me to the finance side of things is because I've always wanted to be the one who dictates where the capital goes. As you can tell from my story, I've come from a place where I've seen cues coming from Kibera.
Right.
I've also kind of sat down and talked to entrepreneurs such as yourself.
Right.
I've had this experience where I've, like, and the podcast also really changed my mindset. Because the podcast with, when you have a co-host like Eli, right? And you see Eli sit down and he's telling you about, like, his content creation company. And you're seeing his life.
Right.
And then you start looking at your life.
Right.
And then you start looking at other people's lives outside of the profession. You start asking yourself, wait a minute, maybe here there's a narrative that's pretty inconsistent.
Yeah.
Personally, my skin in the game was I wanted to kind of live a much higher quality life. And the second thing that also was skin in the game was I also want to dictate which projects get funded when and why.
Mm.
And I wanted to be on the side of moving the capital and not just providing advisory services, right? But it's essential to do that for some time before you get to generate return as an investor.
Yeah.
And that's why I made the investment into the program I did, because I wanted to be the one who says, look, I think there's this really interesting app that might be life-changing. Let's invest in that. I think we can be able to generate a 10, 15, 20% return.
Mm.
There, you know, there's the mathematics behind making money in business. I really wanted to understand that, because I'd seen it time after time on the deal table, and I was like, I can't ask that question.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm being asked is about, like, conditions precedent, and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, this is cute. But I want to be the guy who's like, yeah, why buy this specific company and not that one?
Okay, that's interesting. However, I'm going to push back a little and ask you.
Yeah.
But you're seated in even Triple O's as a good firm. You're seated in a good firm. You're seeing the managing partner driving a good car, living a good life.
Yeah.
Why wasn't that enough?
That's a very good question.
Yeah, why wasn't that enough?
Because I'm seeing, you have to realize that the team in Triple O was like, these guys were pioneers in their time.
Mm-hmm.
There are three lawyers in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of us are intelligent people. All three of us have reached the same conclusion. Mm-hmm. We won't be pioneers. It's hard for us to be pioneers in that field, mm-hmm. because our interests aren't necessarily aligned there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I felt. I felt like for me to excel and to be excellent at what I'm doing, mm-hmm. I really have to have the passion to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, when I was exposed to what the possibilities are, mm-hmm. my passion kind of gravitated towards my original mm-hmm. kind of scheme of mm-hmm. thought, which is, listen, if you want to live an abundant life, then you have to figure out a way to put money into the right people's pockets,
mm-hmm.
so that you can even create a society that is valuable according to your own kind of ideologies mm-hmm. and thoughts. And that's been the thing for me. Like, lawyers are necessary mm-hmm. and they're important, and I'm privileged to have worked in the field. But I think the next level for capitalism is now being more conscious and putting that capital in the right people's pockets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like, you know, I don't know if you've watched Suits. I don't know to what extent you've watched Suits. If you watch Suits to the season where Mike Ross, they discover Mike Ross is a fraud.
Yes.
And so he meets some investment bankers. And I think the exact line the investment banker says to him is, I think lawyers is the small leagues, welcome to the big leagues, or something like that, you know, in the private equity. So anyway, just wanted to throw out that
reference. Investment banking is the big league, my friend. It's the real thing.
it's
the real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess that's why for you, you're feeling like, you know, whatever this managing partner has achieved and even the track that I'm on.
Yeah.
It's not going to be. It's really not going to be enough for what I want to do.
Let me tell you something. I think the biggest, my analysis of where we are as Africans and as Kenyans specifically is, I think there's a lot of inefficient capital moving around. Like, we weep around corruption. We cry about entrepreneurship not growing at the level it needs to. We've seen a youth that's been completely disregarded. I mean, when you look at statistically, what's best to invest in, right?
Yeah.
We had that conversation when we were opening the episode. You're seeing the stock exchange in Kenya is the NASI index is at -0.8.
Yeah.
Whereas the hard currency, like basically it makes more sense to put your cash in hard currencies somewhere and bet against the trends that are going on right now because they've grown by 36%.
Yeah.
Like hard currency reserves have grown highest based off of the, that's the state of our economy today. Bonds are doing 16 to 18% in terms of growth. So the biggest problem that we have is capital flows going to the right people, entering the right pockets. Like what we are enjoying now is an efficient like capital situation where capital went to the right people and the right projects were invested in. So we can have a conversation around financial literacy and this company also sees some sort of benefit from that.
Right.
So that's been kind of my vision, which is I want to make access to wealth for Africans and for Kenyans specifically way more equitable. Yeah. And the way we build that platform isn't just by reading laws and drafting contracts.
Right.
It's also by actually putting capital in the right people's pockets.
Yeah.
And the best thing about it is it feels like impact investing. You can be able to actually do that and generate positive return.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question around consciousness and money, right? And what I want to ask you around this is based off of two conversations that I've had, right? Okay. One was with Rama here, where he was talking about, I was asking him about the separation between him and his ex at the time and whether it was easy to financially distribute the stuff. And he told me, you know, it can be fine, but if scarcity mentality hits you at that point of separation, then it's going to be a problem because, and he was saying that you have to believe in your ability to make money. So just keep that in mind. That's one. Then two, I was having a conversation interesting with Collins. He had gone to Dubai to their headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the people who he met there and people at the leadership of the company talking about owning Ferraris, owning houses in different places.
Oh yeah.
And I remember him talking to me about it and it was from that perspective of like some of these things are possible. Like it's not just for the movies, right? So my question to you is around your consciousness around what would you think, do you think you're conscious about your ability to make money and what you can possibly buy and create and build?
Wow. And I answer this both as a founder and as a professional.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's absolutely no limit to the amount of debits or credits that you can have in your account. The amount of money that can flow into your account is a subject of your abundance and your mentality around the use and deployment of capital. And when I was talking about like the consciousness around money, I wasn't just talking about like my personal consciousness and my personal ability to create and generate wealth.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about society's consciousness as to where the money is going, right? In Africa, we've reached a place where we, and I don't want to go on a tangent, but in Africa, we've reached a place where we are apathetic towards where the money goes. You can see a politician who you know is outrightly corrupt get wealthy and say, ah, that's normal. Whereas in other jurisdictions, that just doesn't happen because you either have to create something or be part of something that we can see adds value to society. So taking that same mentality back, for me, I think I can build, one of a big passion is to build companies and to build, like to invest in people who are doing something meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, FX Pesa sponsoring this podcast and putting its foot down in a big way and like really, really pushing the agenda for financial literacy to hit 1 million people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, hairy, audacious goal, but that is what allows a product like this to exist, that we're setting big, hairy, audacious goals, capital is flowing into the right hands, and we're experiencing growth.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with me as a person, right? I've had to invest a lot into my education, into my career, work for the right people, go to the right places, so that I can finally unlock the information and the potential that also allows me to push a Ferrari.
Right.
But if I refuse to do the work, if I refuse to make that investment in myself, if I determine somewhere in the back of my mind that I'm somehow not worthy of these things, then they're never coming.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So go back to your journey. So now you're back from the UK. You mentioned earlier this was the brokest year you've had.
Brokest year.
So what is the So what are your books looking like when you're coming back from the UK?
Negative. I think I'm the brokest man on this podcast.
Right. And we will come back and interview you 2-3 years from now, once you're a bit further down the equity journey to see where that goes.
Yeah.
But I'd like to okay, so you've said right now you're starting.
Because like you've had to raise, like I've said, like I've leveraged relationships to end up paying for the courses and doing the right things, right? So right now, I have something that I like to call information abundance. Mm-hmm. Like, I know how to lever up a company. Mm. I know how many deals should do. I know how to IPO a company.
Yeah.
I understand the contractual side of that as well as the financial side of that. So now it's up to me to kind of pull on the right levers to start bringing that money into my pocket, which means what? Working for the right companies, meeting the right people, expanding my networks, because I want to move from where I was, which is young lawyer who's just finished KSL and has started working on deals. And I want to enter the strata of private equity investor who has a say on where the capital goes and how to grow that return. So you see that shift, you know, you have a lot of information abundance in the middle. So it's a bit of a wilderness. It's like I'm walking through a desert.
Okay.
You know.
And in fact, I have a question for you based on this desert. What's discouraging you now on the journey you have to take to get to where you envision yourself? And I don't want to know the good things. I don't know what's the thing that keeps you down, the thing that makes you a little sad.
Waking up every morning and seeing other people enjoy the fruits of their labor, in the sense that it's very disheartening sometimes when you go and like pay for an education abroad, right? And like, you know, the job market is hostile. The companies you want to work for aren't really hiring. So you might find yourself either compromise and go and work for a brand that isn't as big or a company that isn't as big, just so that you can kind of put money in your pocket. It's a very discouraging thing for me because I'm very target oriented. I'm very like, I'm type A. I'm like, I want to get that job in that specific office. I visualize myself in that specific chair. So the thing that discourages me is waking up every day and not being quite there yet. It's a hit on the ego as well because, you know, I was at a point in my life where I was earning a salary as a lawyer and I had the podcast revenue coming in. And so, like, I was like, I'm good. But now I'm in this space where I'm like, no, I have to be careful. I have to pick the meetings I'm going to. I can't even start dating buddy. I can't start, hey, babe, let's go to Meso. Hiya.
Interesting, because actually I want to transition a little now to the, as we have, you know, the end bit of this podcast, talk a little bit about, I guess, the man talk element. And not so much man talk element as it exists as a podcast, but being a man in this society. You're turning 30. You have, I guess, you know, whether it's females at your level or just a bit higher a bit lower, what's the socializing scene right now for someone who is, for lack of a better word, starting afresh in a different market and trying to build something? What's that like for you?
To be honest, I don't think I am the conventional guy to actually answer this, because I think I've done a lot of things very publicly. Like, I think Mantok's success has been a very public success, and kind of we are still taking it to the next level, so shout out to the team for that. And you'll notice that I haven't mentioned Mantok's finances as being mine. You've noticed that. Like, it's the business's finances. So how that's operating is at a completely different level. And in many ways, it's I call it the baby. So the baby must walk on its own. And we can't be taking from the baby as it's growing. So for me and my own personal endeavors as a founder, I have to think about how I can manage and finance my own life. And like I said, I've done a lot of things very publicly. So I've found a lot of empathy. I'd say we have to give... You know, I think women low-key get a bad rep for being like, we don't want to build with him. But the truth about it is, because I kind of have a resume and a body of work that I think I've done, I'm not kind of being ostracized for it. But I understand guys who are as well. Because me, I'm on the windward side. There's the leeward side. Where there's a lot of guys who are building and trying to make something of themselves. And the empathy is not there for them.
Okay. So for you, it's sort of like a...
you and I both know that we take pride as young men to provide and to be there financially for our loved ones. Like, if you're into someone, you want to like show her the world, you want to take her on trips, you want to make sure she's fine, her hair, her nails, you know, make sure like she's good, you know what I mean, and that she can come to you as a point of stability. At this point, I'm finding that's what I was saying, like, money is there, it's something that's a need. But my emotional stability is coming in as a substitute for most of these other things. And my experience and my wisdom and my exposure is what I'm finding myself offer.
Okay.
And I guess... the job, the big money will come eventually.
And, you know, I guess maybe I'll ask you this as a social commentator on the male existence in Nairobi or in the world, in Kenya at large. Like, one, where do you think... Mantok as a brand would be? Like, if I think about different male contributors in my content space or the content spheres that I exist, I see Amerix, I see, of course, there's Mantok, I see, who's the other guy? There's Kibe, I see, is there anyone else? I don't know. I can't think of anyone else. But where do you think, where do you think you play? Because I think there's a lot of questions around the social fabric and male existence, you know, of what, you know, who's a man anymore, who's a man in society and all of that. Yeah.
I think you'll find that my understanding of Mantok as a platform is we have refrained from playing an us versus them game.
Mm-hmm.
And what we decided to do is to build a platform for a particular type of gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular type of gentleman is a gentleman that's curious, who wants to be exposed, and who's looking for a particular level of intellectualism in whatever it is that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, we've opened the platform up. In the beginning when we started, it was just, you know, bros, yeah, bro, this happened, bro. This, it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of fun with it, because trust me, it's fun. That, the bro ones are fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones where that are educational, that's where the power is. When you bring somebody like Fancy Fingers on set and he tells you about his experience holding his son for the first time, and now you're seeing an album come out for the for that specific child and for his family, that blessing is on Mantok.
Mm-hmm.
When you're seeing Bien talking about his relationship with Chiki and settling down as a musician, that conversation is on Mantok.
Mm-hmm.
For us, the gem is in finding wisdom from others, that wisdom that we get from other men, and also women with experience and women who've kind of made have families and have a lot of wisdom to share with us, we also give them the platform. The danger that I often find is that I call it the balkanization of genders. Like, they're on that side, us we're on this side. And for us as Mantok, we're like, nah, that society runs this way. And if you want to really function well in society, you have to have an understanding of both perspectives. But of course, you know, I can't speak to any other person's podcast or any other person's perspective. But for me, as a founder of Mantok, our team has a very clear understanding of here, we are not trying to fight. Here, we're trying to have good vibes, good conversations. And the guys we usually look up to for that are Shits and Gigs.
Yeah.
Shits and Gigs are the biggest podcast on God's green earth.
Yeah.
And vibes. Like, and isn't that the masculinity that we should embody?
Yeah.
Who feels unsafe when watching them?
Yeah.
Nobody. So yeah, so that's kind of my POV, and for us as Mantok, we're seeing the world as being our oyster. We're trying to get all across East Africa. We've collaborated now with the Raymond Kahumas. We've done work in London, so now we are looking at towards growing our perspective here in Africa and sharing that perspective with our diaspora audience, which is now quite massive.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's say, as you're wrapping up, let's say you get your money now, or you know, you walk out of here and you start getting the money that you're anticipating, that you're hoping for.
Yes.
What do you do with it? How do you what do you do with that money? How do you spend it?
As a young man, I'm just keen on building a life, my friend. I just really want to live a high quality life with high quality experiences and high quality people.
What does that mean?
High quality life, like,
Like practically.
Practically.
What does, like how, let's say,
I want to drive. I want to drive a very nice car.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say because they haven't paid me that money. I want to drive a very nice car. I want to live in a very nice neighborhood. I want to do work that is fulfilling. I want to date slash marry a woman that is beautiful and loving. I want to chill with men who are insightful.
Do you think there's a cost to that?
There is.
Do you think there's a cost to marrying a woman that's beautiful? A financial cost.
Brother. My biggest understanding of beauty as a concept and beauty as an idea is, yes, we always say beauty comes in the eyes of the beholder, so it is subjective. But when I say beautiful, I don't mean that she just looks objectively beautiful. A beautiful person, you know, a kind person, a person that is wise and intelligent, a person that is also reliable. You know, those are the things that I'm also saying. But of course, I want her to be fire. I want her to be fire.
Yeah.
And there's a financial cost to that, and that's why I've done my master's. Kama ujafanya pole.
Okay, how much do you think that figure would be? Like, to achieve that life, do you have a figure? Do you know that to achieve this life, it would cost me $1 million a month or $2 million a month?
You know the craziest thing? I've lived a very high-quality life without making that much money. Like, if I look at my life right now, like, even the reason why we're on this set together and the fact that I've managed to kind of be hosted by your platform and I have these lovely people in this room is because, like, I've managed to build something that has given me the reputation and the relationships that have put me on this chair.
Right.
You understand? It's not necessarily a financial figure. It's who do I need to know? And today I know Barack and I am rich.
Yeah.
You understand? But if I was to put a figure on what I want in life, I still can't because I have it. I have majority of what I want. Yeah.
Okay.
With zero in my bank. Absolute zeros.
Okay. Final question.
Yeah.
And this one is for me, I guess, also as a lawyer. What would you say or what do you have to say to, because KSL passes what? Between 10 to 25% of the people who do those exams. So what do you say to the student or the pupil who has 6 P's or you know isn't among or even 4 whatever the number is and isn't among the 9 and is looking and saying, oh, you know, Oscar was a lawyer and worked at X and that X and now he's done his master's in finance and law.
Yeah,
yeah, what would be
my advice would be there's the biggest one of life's biggest curses on us as human beings is the limitedness of our vision. Just we'd never see that far. We never have a perspective of what will happen even tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that for me, my life has taken a direction that I absolutely didn't expect it to take. Like I told you, I got a lot of my success front-loaded, especially in the legal career.
Yeah.
And now I'm having it a little bit more of, I'd say, that success in a very different way.
Yeah.
So I'd say keep going and don't believe in your eyes, believe in your heart. Because your eyes will tell you, oh, you know, you're not quite there yet. Because I'm there. I mean, that's wilderness that I've just told you. I've bet a big bag so that I can move from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And I think everyone goes through that journey. And that's the hero's journey of not trusting what you see, not trusting what you feel, but trusting what's in your heart and the direction that's going to take you.
Okay.
Yeah.
You sound like a TED Talk. Anyway,
yeah, you expected me to start telling you, listen, this is how you grow EBITDA, this is how you grow debt and equity ratios.
No, it's fine. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Yeah, I think I've learned quite a bit, and of course learned a bit more about you, and that was really intriguing.
I'm happy I tried my best, guys.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if you're at home and you thought I was going to tell you I'm a millionaire. I'm not, man. I really have to big up this podcast because actually I heard about it from my cousin who sent me Antonio Witches' conversation, and I watched it and I entered a rabbit hole. So these conversations are necessary, and I really hope you guys just keep growing.
Yeah.
And you're welcome to Mantok anytime. Bring the crew.
Yeah, of course, Collins. Alliance. Yeah. You can have an alliance reunion.
We sit down and talk about the houses we were in, you know?
Of course, of course. Well, guys, thanks for this episode. Oscar, thanks for coming. This was a great episode.
Always.
And we will see you guys in the next episode. Please remember, share. Like, of course, you guys have been sharing. We've been seeing the growth. Keep sharing. Keep telling people about us. Keep telling us who you want to see here next, both in professions and in people. And we'll try and bring them here.
Amen.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right.
Nice.